Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump is now the first former or sitting president in American history to face a federal indictment.
Adherence to the rule of law is a bedrock principle of the Department of Justice, and our nation's commitment to the rule of law sets an example for the world. We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everyone.
That was the special counsel, Jack Smith, earlier today after federal prosecutors unsealed the indictments of former President Donald Trump and one of his personal aides. At the same time, the Republican field of primary presidential contenders continues to grow. This week, former Vice President Mike Pence and former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie both entered the race that now has about a dozen hopefuls. So, what would you like to know about how a frontrunner's federal indictment could affect this presidential race? We are a couple months away from the first presidential debate, which will be held, Republican primary presidential debate, which will be held in Milwaukee. And how are you differentiating the roughly dozen candidates on the GOP side? And how do you feel about Democratic President Joe Biden running for re-election? You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. It's a presidential politics roundup with Julia Azari joining us now, Marquette University professor of political science. And Julia, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. What a week.
We are in some uncharted waters here with a former president now facing his second indictment in 3 weeks, this following a court that found him liable and for millions of dollars in a civil case. How, if at all, is this affecting the Republican race to be the next presidential nominee?
Well, there's a couple of different ideas, and this is all really just trying to think it through because, of course, we don't have any polling that reflects the changes, the events of yesterday and the release of the indictment charges today. We'll know more in a week or two. The first indictment, the one that came down in Manhattan a while back, seems to have actually improved Trump's standing in the Republican nomination polls. And this is just a coincidence in time, and it might just be that. But it might also be that this has sort of closed ranks around the president's supporters and kind of reminded them that they support him because he sort of pushes back on established institutions in a way that appeals to them. That might not translate to this latest indictment. It might, again, we're sort of purely speculating. The other piece that is interesting, especially as you point out, as there's a whole bunch of other hopefuls in the field, is this argument about electability and his kind of chances in the general. And it seems that this is, on the one hand, this effect is potentially quite real, that the general public isn't super keen on these indictments and is somewhat concerned about what the former president may have done and see some room for holding him accountable in the event that these charges stick. But the other piece of that is, will that actually, does that electability argument hold water in the context of the primary? It's not totally obvious yet that that is exactly how Republican primary voters are thinking about the different candidates. So those are the sort of two lines of logic that I see there. It seems kind of insane to say that it's not certain that this will affect the nomination at all, but it's possible that that's going to be the case.
Well, but there is also the possibility of a third indictment still to come out of Fulton County, Georgia, about the election.
Yeah, absolutely, 2020. Yep.
Thank you.
I know it's been a week. So I have no idea whether that will happen and in what time frame, or what impact that would possibly be. I do think that one of the things we'll learn, I'm probably going to say this phrase a lot during our time together, that things that we will learn, because we do not know, because this has not happened. But one of the things I think we'll learn is how much of this in the public mind is about, sort of comes down to, it's all about how people already feel about Trump. Most people know how they feel. It's all about partisanship. It's all about these sort of baked in existing attitudes, versus how much of it is a response to what's actually happened. And the substance of each indictment is quite different and signifies, I think, really different kinds of things that people might be thinking about. And the one in New York, I know, did, struck some people as kind of chained together. It's a financial disclosure charge that is connected to this kind of larger set of potential crimes. And that's, I think, maybe harder for people. It was, I had to read it a couple times to grasp exactly the legal logic of that, and also not just not as big of a deal. This 49-page indictment that has been unsealed today, it has much larger kind of implications about national security and classified documents, and there are all these kind of questions about how much that is potentially going to matter, and Georgia would cue in a whole other thing yet about the status of the election after the 2020 votes were cast and counted. And so voters may have very different impressions of each indictment. We may be dealing with very different things, or it may come to kind of down to, as so many things do, kind of what side are you on set of questions that doesn't take the substance into account. We just don't know.
And things we still have to learn. Julia Azari, political science professor at Marquette University, joining us. But what about how these indictments are affecting the rest of the Republican field right now? You had Florida Governor Ron DeSantis defending the former president as a victim of, quote, the weaponization of federal law enforcement. You had Republican candidate and businessman Vivek Ramaswamy saying that he would pardon Donald Trump on day one were he to be elected president. Where you have others like Asa Hutchinson, the former Arkansas governor, who said this is reason enough for him to step aside from the field. Chris Christie, former governor from New Jersey, seems set to at least do what he can to undercut former President Trump. And Mike Pence joined the field of Republican presidential contenders this week, but seems to have had the wind taken out of his sails by all the Donald Trump news today.
That's a pretty good rundown. It's quite fascinating to watch a number of these hopefuls. On the one hand, Trump is the person to beat. Trump is the person to run against. And to watch, especially candidates like Pence and DeSantis, whose main project is differentiating themselves from Trump in some way. And so Pence kind of came out the gate earlier in the week, trying to differentiate himself from Trump and really to draw a distinction between their reactions to January 6th, which was an interesting choice. But then when it came time to talk about this particular indictment, they very much, I saw something today that sort of put this really succinctly. They very much became, what team are you on, and who's part of the team? And on the one hand, this makes perfect sense. That is how political parties work. It's important to remember when we're thinking about presidential primary, it's not the same thing as a general election. It's a party process of people who are ultimately going to share a lot of the same ideas and pull in the same direction. But on the other hand, this is really the key moment to differentiate yourself from, from a pretty major situation going on for the former president. And many of them, with the exception, as you said, of Asa Hutchinson, have kind of opted not to really embrace that tack and instead to close ranks a little bit.
Former Vice President Mike Pence joining the race this week, and his campaign announcement in Iowa had this in part to say.
We can defend our nation and secure our border. We can revive our economy and put our nation back on a path to a balanced federal budget. We can defend our liberties and give America a new beginning for life. But it'll require new leadership in the White House and the Republican Party. The crises we face, to borrow a phrase, are all man-made. And that man is Joe Biden.
Julia, you co-authored an opinion piece this week at MSNBC.com about how Mike Pence appears to be trying to take the Reagan Republican lane, and then the question about what that Reagan Republican lane would look like in a 2024 presidential election.
Yeah, I'm a little bit obsessed with this idea of the way that politicians use time as kind of a marker for ideology. And I think politicians in both parties do this, which we wrote about a bit in the piece, that usually when politicians in the past have talked about something being new, new is sort of a word that stands in for kind of moderating and moving to the center. and kind of retooling what the party stands for. And you see bits and pieces, kind of elements of that in some of these strategies, because the last couple of years have been relatively rough at the national level for Republicans, and maybe especially in 2022, losing a lot of races that they might have expected to win. And I see Pence doing this in a kind of very interesting way. So in that clip there, he talks about new leadership and moving on from the Trump years. But at the same time, he's very interested in sort of moving backwards into this more classical vision of Reagan Republicanism. And ideologically, that's not exactly to the center, but it is to the mainstream. And I think that it's just very interesting to me. And it also highlights something that I feel like we don't hear a whole lot about, sort of gets absorbed in a lot of the sideshow of day-to-day politics, but that there are some real emergent fissures in the Republican Party around Trumpism and foreign policy, and the kind of sense of what the country will be in the world and how it will operate. That the substance of Reagan's administration and how it operated in the world, how it thought about alliances, that's very, very different from a more sort of populist and inward-looking Trump kind of approach, and that all really comes to a head in the Russia situation and in kind of, you know, doubling down on support for Ukraine versus pivoting to more accommodation of Putin and Russia. And those are very important and substantive issues, and there are disagreements ideologically, I think, to some degree, within both camps, but especially among Republicans. And that's an area where Pence also really breaks with his, you know, his former running mate.
Julia Azari, our guest, professor of political science at Marquette University. We're looking at the field of presidential candidates with the unsealed indictment today of former president and current candidate Donald Trump. Get your reaction when we continue at 1-800-642-1234. What do you see in this presidential field as it now stands, and what will you be watching for going forward? 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Our conversation with Julia continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're continuing our conversation with Marquette University political science professor Julia Azari. We're looking at the broad field of presidential contenders for 2024. We're taking a look at the news today about the unsealed 37 felony count indictment against former president and current candidate Donald Trump, and what that may do to upset the field or how it may be maintained. And how do you feel about the federal agents indicting a former president? Who would you like to see get the GOP nomination? You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Watching the Sunday morning talking head shows over the weekend, Julia, one of the things that stood out to me was a guest on Meet the Press, Senator Mike Rounds from South Dakota, saying that he wouldn't commit to supporting a Republican presidential candidate unless that candidate were Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina. He hasn't gotten a lot of attention or notice so far in the Republican presidential contending race, but that certainly stood out to me. What did you make of that statement?
Well, that's interesting. That's a good point. Scott has sort of fallen off the radar with all the hoopla of this past week, but he is a really interesting candidate. I mean, we'll see. I think he makes as much sense as a number of the other candidates in the race, and maybe even more, in terms of kind of bridging both the kind of Trump wing of the Republican Party and the more traditional wings. Pence is really throwing his lot in with the more traditional wing, which is tricky since he was in the Trump administration. We also haven't talked a lot about Chris Christie, who's a New Jersey Republican, which means that long before Trump was on the scene, Christie was sort of, you know, had worked with Democrats a lot, being in a more Democratic part of the country. And, you know, Tim Scott has done some bipartisan work, is an African-American Republican, which is unusual in Congress, and has worked some on race issues, has also taken some more conservative stances on that. You know, this is very, very interesting, figure. And it is very interesting to see one of his Senate colleagues make that kind of endorsement and have that not be from someone, for example, from his own from his own state. So maybe he's a sort of quiet alternative to Trump. I think that one of the things is not very sort of theoretically interesting to talk about, but is nevertheless true, is that name recognition counts for a lot in primaries like the ones that we have that go on for a long time and cost a lot of money. And Scott is, you know, has maybe even more of an uphill battle than some of the other longer shot candidates. And that's a little bit challenging. He's sort of seems in some ways like some of the members of Congress who were trying to get the Democratic nomination in 2020 and just didn't have the kind of name recognition liftoff, even though they were interesting candidates.
Which is why his name popped out to me when it came up on Meet the Press on Sunday. I was rather surprised. Let's go to your calls now with our guest, Julia Azari, professor of political science at Marquette University, at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lauren Madison, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Well, hi. I heard you mention the perennial problem of kind of firebrand candidates who not necessarily a majority of voters support in the getting the nod in the primary. And I'm wondering why I am not hearing at all in the press from experts like yourself about the institution of ranked choice voting, which would pretty much eliminate that problem altogether.
I would love to hear a political scientist's take on ranked choice voting. Now, this is where you don't just mark a box, but you rank the candidates by the way you see them. And then there can be runoffs so that if your first top candidate isn't selected or isn't among the contenders, that you would actually still not be throwing your vote away, but would still have a chance to have your vote count towards one of your other top ranked candidates. Julia, what do you think of ranked choice voting?
I hear other experts talk about it all the time, and if you want to hear more about it, I would suggest checking out some work by my colleague and good friend Lee Drutman at New America, as a think tank, and he's written a lot on this topic. I think, you know, it plays out slightly differently if we're thinking about a general election versus a primary. One of the ideas with a general election is like it might make things more conducive for a multi-party system. Also, as the caller pointed out, like it might sort of reduce the voice of more extreme candidates at the expense of maybe more sort of moderate and mainstream candidates. I'm really not sure about it all, to be honest. Right now, we have a couple of states and localities that have experimented with it. I don't think it's really conclusive that it's done a whole lot. It might be possible that with these changes would play out over a really long period of time. I think it's possible that, like, there's still people arguing about 2016 because Trump was sort of not a majority favorite. He was kind of a plurality candidate in the Republican Party. Of, you know, what would that have looked like under different voting systems? Would another candidate have been able to consolidate support? And like, people don't agree. So I think it's interesting to explore. I think it's worth thinking about.
But the
and
jury's
certainly
out.
Worth reading up on. But yeah, in my opinion, and I think this is the expert consensus now, that like Maine has tried it, Alaska's tried it, New York City did it in their mayoral election. It's sort of like the jury's out. It hasn't really produced any really stunning outcomes.
We go next to Max in Barron County. Max, good afternoon. You're on the air with Julia Azari. Max?
Hi. You asked who I would thought would be a good candidate. Just somebody with less background in politics than higher education, a PhD, a doctorate. Biased opinion, I would say doctorate in environmental science, but anything in that higher education range.
Well, I appreciate the call, Max, because there is always this call for we want a politician who's not a politician, and that was Donald Trump in 2016. But right now, you say PhD, and I think Cornel West, who is going to run on the People's Party ticket, who's a PhD and taught at Harvard and Princeton, but that certainly seems to be among the third parties and the longest of long shots. But the idea of a non-politician running for political office, what do you think, Julia?
Well, I think everyone's got to start somewhere, right? So you always have to, run for your first office. I don't see anything really wrong with people being in office for a long time, and there are trade-offs. You learn a lot in office. You learn a lot about how public policy works. I think the caller is expressing a very interesting view, which is sort of like a mixture of anti-politician but very pro kind of like expertise and subject matter. I think this is really interesting. I haven't thought about it. I very rarely hear people say they want to hear more from PhDs in any context. I think that's super interesting. I think that people who want to get into politics from another field would do well to kind of start local and work their way up. Presidency is a big job for someone without kind of public service and political expertise.
But
And I
working
think
your way up makes you a politician, right, Julia?
it does.
Yeah, so it's kind of you're in a bind, and maybe for president you'd want somebody who has some political experience to step into it. And I apologize, we're out of time, but we could talk about this all afternoon. Julia,
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for yours today.
Yeah, thank you.
Julia Azari is professor of political science at Marquette University.